Good morning. If you're visiting, warm welcome to you. My name is Adam. I'm sure you've met me before. I can't see any unfamiliar faces. There's a little rumbling. I don't know whether anyone needs to do anything. It's like, you know that feeling you got when Jaws is about to attack? It's that kind of feel to it. Thank you, Rob. Now then, how are we all doing? Are we all good? Brilliant. Now then, Drisloyn Castle, down between Llandeilo and Carmarthen, all right? Is a place we like to go as a family. Very quickly, we build family memories. It's a good thing to do. Look back, you can remember stuff. A couple of things that we remember as a family, don't we? Is going up to Drisloyn Castle. There's like a nice river next to it. All excited about seeing the castle. The kids got excited by the fact there was a dead sheep in the river. All right, that's one of the things. Sam had a pout there when he was two. Didn't want to be photographed. We took a photo. He screamed all the way back down the hill. We took our Spanish visitors, Sarah, Victor and Carla, up there. They loved it from Spain, going out in the wilds and going up a castle. They loved it. They were jumping off walls and stuff. Great. Enjoyed all that. My brother went up there with his new camera. It was a tidy camera. You know, Wales, tidy. It means it's really good. He had a really good camera. It was in the winter, snow, some lovely photos. Great memories. Isaac, we go up. The reason why we went up there, you and your mate, you made like a kind of camp kind of thing, wasn't it? It was like gale force wind. I agreed to go. I froze. We were covered in sheep's poo. It was all over the place. It was windy, pouring down. Memories. That's parenthood for you. And there was this buzzard flying around, didn't it? Isaac tells me it's a buzzard. It could have been a kite, all right? That's a, you know, these birds. Right. Now then, but it's based there, okay? Now then, let me tell you a little bit about it very quickly, just building a bit of a background here. As a 21st century family, it's great to go back to this. It was built in 1220, right? A little bit of history. Interwoven with conflict between the Welsh and the English. You never would have guessed, would you? All right, and it still goes on today. Big rugby match today, guys. Whose side do you want? As Jez was saying, I can see a few three lions there. That's more to do with football, isn't it? But anyway, we'll give you that. Wales and England, that's great. It's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to it, all right? But what struck me about this castle and the ruins is the size and the sheer volume and the thickness of the walls and the ruins, and they're down and they're so big. And when you see it for yourself, you think, gosh, there's some effort gone into building this kind of stuff. And as you look over the valley, it's a scene of natural beauty. This isn't very clear here, but you can see all the way down the valley, that's the Towy River there. That's Paxton's Tower there. If you go up there, you can also go up there and have a look from the opposite direction. Very good. If you feel like going up there and getting muddy, go for it. Set your sat-nav. So, in history, it's been besieged by the English. There was conflict from Wales to England, England to Wales, and all the rest of it. And my mind goes back, I don't know about you, but do you like to imagine what has gone on in history and in certain situations? I can imagine, what was it like to be in that castle for months and months and months without food, without water, and you know there's an army about to come and get you? Nice to get your mind into that context for today, because we're talking about the fall of Jericho, okay? Now, it's not a happy story, so I won't concentrate too much on it, but I'll hopefully get a bit of insight from God on it all, okay? So there's different strategies for succeeding, overpowering a stronghold, all right? They used to use battering rams, tall ladders, they have to be tall ladders, if you see the size on the thing back there. Or one method was that you get like these specialist kind of guys who would mine into the base of the castle, and they'd prop up with big bits of wood, and they'd form like a little weakness, and then they'd set fire to it, and then eventually the wall would crumble and break and fall down, and that actually did happen in Drisloyn. So we're going to look at the account at Jericho, okay? So we're into our next bit of the series. It's Joshua chapter 6, for those who'd like to go and read the whole thing, because I won't do that today. I'll pull out little bits and bobs from it. So Joshua 6, okay? Can you remember that? Mm-hmm. Good. Right. Let me paint the picture for you. The city of Jericho was built thousands of years before Joshua was even born, and it was one of the oldest cities in the world. And like Norman castles found today, we got loads of castles throughout Britain, different types, the Norman castle has walls of 20 feet thick and 25 feet high, and that was the typical wall in Jericho. So 20 foot, this is the thickness of the wall, is the edge of this stage here. I prepared this earlier. Two, the split in the wallpaper there just before the second radiator, which is here. Right, that's 20 foot. That's how big, thick the wall was. It's a fair old wall, isn't it? Can you imagine getting a builder to come and build you one of them? That would cost. Right, the height The height is approximately, you know, the size of the ceiling, that's high, isn't it? Well, it's twice the size of that. Twice the height and that thick. That's a big wall. So you can imagine how strong Jericho was. Soldiers standing guard could see for miles, and Jericho was a symbol of military power and might. The Canaanites thought it was invincible, and it was the stronghold of Canaan, a stronghold, all right? Now, we watched a film recently called The Grey, when we were on holidays, The Grey. It's a 15, all right? I was like, should I let the boys see it? Shall I not? Sam's 14, Isaac's 12. I'm here, I'm a big boy, I can look after them. We'll go for it, because I heard it's about survival and this kind of stuff. It happens, there's an aeroplane crash, but the problem they got is they crashed near a den of wolves, all right? So I won't tell you the full story, but if you don't like blood, don't watch it. Because within one of the first scenes, when the guys was on guard, he gets attacked by a wolf, and the wolf goes to his jugular, and there's, you know, it's a bit gory, there's a bit of blood, well, a lot of blood everywhere. So I'm like, I don't know if I watch this. And the boys are, she's brilliant, she's great. It's like, role reversal. So, you know, that's the film. But the point of it is the jugular vein, okay? Jericho was the jugular vein of Canaan. It was the stronghold. It was the place that Joshua and the army were about to embark on and conquer. And the fall of Jericho would be a disaster to the Canaanites. The destruction of Jericho would put the fear of Israel into the heart of every Canaanite. Fear into the heart of every Canaanite. And we pick up the story. We find Joshua near Jericho. And we heard brilliantly from Jez last week how Joshua met with the commander of the Lord's army. And people think that, you know, that was Jesus, an Old Testament view of Jesus. And Joshua spoke to him. And the commander of the Lord's army said this, "Take off your sandals, for the place you are standing is holy." So Joshua is in the presence of the Lord, and he's about to face the stronghold of Jericho. And in life, if ever we're facing a stronghold before us, to be on holy ground, to be in the presence of God, that is a great place to start. That's a great place to be. You can't beat being in the presence of the Lord whilst facing that situation. So, a stronghold, what is it? It's a place where a particular cause or belief is strongly defended or upheld. A place that has been fortified so as to protect it against attack. Now, we read about, I've heard people saying that the Canaanites, they weren't very nice, they were a little bit evil, all right? So I wanted to get to know for myself, what did that actually mean? Did a little bit of research. And tell you what, they were a bit dodgy, I must say. Right, and I think you'll have to all go and have a little look for yourself to really get, because I can't go into every particular detail. But they had a history of child sacrifice and idolatry, and that's, you know, that's bad enough, but it gets a bit worse, to be honest. So you can imagine, I don't really want to go into all these things. So the list goes on, and it gets worse. So I'm not going to go there. So do have a little read for yourself, just to understand, get your head around what does it mean to be evil and rebellious before God. And I think that unpacks the context of, you know, the promised land, why Joshua goes in and God's people go in. And you've got to see the big difference between what it is to be wrong and your practices are all evil to, you know, what God wants to usher into the world and the grace and the love of God. So I'll unpack things a little bit more now. So basically, a horrific people with horrific practices and in total rebellion against God. And Jericho represents the stronghold of rebellion against God. But what we know is this, that God was already at work. The Canaanites had formed a fear of the God of the Israelites. So people got to hear about the crossing of the Jordan. They got to hear about the early military battles that Joshua had led the guys through to win. So the Canaanites, although they were like, you know, in a real bad place, they had the fear of God coming upon them. You know, there was something happening. Okay. Joshua 2, verse 9. Rahab to the spies, and we've already studied this, okay? And it says this, I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. So that's evidence of someone living there, Rahab the prostitute. She knows what's going on in the community. She knows that these guys are a little bit worried now about God's people, all right? Can you imagine melting in fear? You know, just melting away so there's nothing left. It's like a horrible feeling, isn't it? If any of us have ever felt fear before. But these guys know this is like a life and death situation here. And in chapter 6 says this, no one went into Jericho and no one went out through fear of the Israelites. So there's a bit of a background. So the Canaanites were in rebellion and stuck in their ways. And they know when that something is about to take place. God says this to Joshua, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands. This is within the first couple of verses of Joshua 6. See, I've delivered Jericho into your hands. So it's good to know that God is at work, isn't it? Even though these things, bad things are going on, God is at work to address some stuff. And he tells Joshua that the enemy is already defeated. Now, over the years, I don't know, but I've experienced a lot of things sometimes that go on in your head, isn't it? Good things, bad things, temptations, wrong thoughts about ourselves, wrong thoughts about others. And all this stuff sometimes can be there in our mindsets. And the best way I can describe it is if ever you've seen Tom and Jerry, and I mentioned this before, Tom and Jerry, that cartoon from the 70s, 80s, maybe before, maybe after, I don't know if everyone's heard of it, maybe not, but there would always be like this little, these little like devil mouse and a devil cat and a nice angel mouse and a nice angel cat who would like whisper good things into Tom and Jerry's ears, or the little devilly one would tell him to get up to bad things. And that is the way I can only describe it. Sometimes there's like, within our mindset, isn't it? There's stuff that goes on. And we know there must be two different sources. And we know through Bible, through the scripture, that God is a God of love, of purity, of justice. And we know that there's an enemy. And he just wants to destroy, okay, and do not nice things. So we got to be real in our lives. Like, a lot of people ask me, well, what about, you know, bad things are going on in the world? What about, you know, suffering, da da da. And when you come to a place of truth before God and understand his love, and then accept the fact that there is actually an enemy at work as well, it all really makes sense. It makes sense for us, because we can experience so much love and grace and compassion, but we can experience the nasty stuff as well that goes on around us on a day-to-day basis. So the actions and lifestyles of the Canaanites, they were odd, they were gross, to say the least. And it is seen that from their idolatry, that even their gods, okay, are portrayed as being incestuous and adulterous. And, you know, if that's their portrayal of gods, you know, no wonder the people are so messed and screwed up, because that's the society that they're living in. So this place, Jericho, is a stronghold of all that. So not just a physical place, but also a stronghold of the mind. So the people now, there was a stronghold set in place within their minds, okay? So they couldn't even, you know, react responsibly or do things possibly. You know, we get to touch on Rahab later, but we see there's something different going on in her mind. So it's the most powerful stronghold. If you were to think of today's age, you know, it's what goes on in our heads, isn't it? It's our mindset. It's what we think is what goes on. And I just want to unpack that a little bit more. So For the Canaanites, they were ultimately in rebellion against the one true, pure, just, loving God, the God of Joshua, the God of Israel. And we know then, like I just mentioned earlier, that there's an enemy that we have to deal with in life. And this is how Jesus, all right, described a little something to the Jews, all right? They were having a bit of a heated discussion, shall we say, all right? Because the Jews, the religious hypocrites who didn't believe Jesus, didn't know who he was, and they just wanted to have a go at him. And this is what came out of that in John 8:44, right? This is Jesus speaking to them. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. So Jesus, on a real go, and he is saying, you know, he's touching on religiosity here, he's touching on you know, Lucifer, Satan, the devil, whatever. He is the father of lies. And when we have experienced a stronghold in our mind, quite often it is the enemy lying to us and deceiving us and knocking us and having a go. And, you know, it's a strategy to break us away from the knowledge of who God is, that God is full of love, that God is full of grace, that God is full of peace, that God is just, and that God is real. And he will do anything he can to wreck us, wreck the church, wreck love, wreck God's just, you know, love and expression on earth. And he will do anything to destroy that. And we see the two opposite ends here between the Canaanites and who Joshua and the Israelites are fighting for and representing. So it's his strategy to deceive us and trip us up. To deceive us and trip us up. To bring us down. To be ineffective. To depress us. To make us anxious. To make us rock bottom. I don't know if anyone has ever felt like that before. But I have gone through times of like, really, oh my gosh, this is like a nightmare. And quite often, I just got to stop for a moment and realise I'm allowing the negativity and the lies and the deceit of the enemy to infiltrate my thought patterns, to infiltrate what's going on in here. And sometimes you just got to stop yourself and say, oh my gosh, God, you know, help me, I'm sorry. The enemy's on a real go, and, you know, this is not the truth of who you've made me to be. God, you know, when we find in the Bible what God really thinks of us, that he allowed his son to die for us, that we're broken from sin, that we're forgiven, that he was prepared to let his son die, you know, because he loves us, because he's children, and we're forgiven, and he wants to spend the eternal relationship with us. This is the God that I love, and this is what, you know, we really should be thinking about ourselves, that we're children of God. We're priests before him, that we're loved, that we're forgiven, that we're blessed, that every little failing and trip up a mess up that we think God do, you know, God just wants to love us and bless us. He wants to love us and bless us and forgive us. And that is the strategy of God. And that is who God is. He's love. But there is an enemy at work, okay? The enemy is destructive. He wants us to suffer with guilt. He wants us to suffer with fear, condemnation, and rejection. He wants all that for our lives. But there's good news. There is good news. He is an enemy. What type of enemy? A defeated enemy. He is defeated by the work of Jesus. He's defeated. We fight against a defeated enemy, which is great, isn't it? That's good news. It's good news. So thank God for that. And this was God's message to Joshua. Jericho is delivered into your hands. For us, it's the message that we're delivered from the works of the enemy in our lives through faith in Jesus. That the power and consequence of sin over us are defeated by Jesus' death and resurrection. Get in there. The war is won, but battles go on. I was reading the other day about this testimony of a Japanese guy, World War II fighter in the Philippines. The war was over, as we know, in 1945. It wasn't until 1974 that he came out of hiding because he was still under the instructions of his commander that he should still fight, that he should still be in battle. He didn't even realise the war was over. And it got to the stage where there was even like shootouts with local police like 10 years, 20 years later. If you want to check it out, it's a really interesting story. The reason why he's come to the front now, this guy only died a year or two ago. And his name is Hiro Onoda. Hiroonoda. So in case you want to know. But go and have a look. But what is interesting is the war is done, is complete. But there's still the day-to-day battles, all right? There's still the day-to-day battles. So, first of all, there's nothing to be ashamed of when it comes to matters of the mind and the battles that we may face. There's nothing at all to be ashamed of because God knows how we tick. He made us. He created us, for goodness sake. He knows the struggles and the difficulties that we have, all right? So, the good stuff is to let's allow God to get in there and not allow the enemy to be so successful in there, all right? Now, on a light note, the England football team, okay, have employed Dr. Steve Peters, a sports psychologist / psychiatrist, because different things are telling me he's a different person, all right? But anyway, we've got the Three Lions. Fantastic to see Simon with the Three Lions top on. Well done, Simon. Also, Carl, where are you, Carl? By there. Proud Englishman. Well done, boys. All the best for later. But this chap, all right, has been employed by the England management team to help the England players and staff, etc., ahead of the Brazil World Cup. I think he wants to help them realise that it's unlikely they're going to get past round one. But here we go. But Wales didn't even get in the World Cup. Yeah, anyway. But before you say it, okay, no. But getting to it, it just shows, you know, this is just a light side. Okay, I'm going to go into a bit of a heavier one in a minute. So this guy's gone in now, and he's going to help them think, these guys, that when they go to the tournament, they are focused on the job. And, you know, you do get, if you're in front of millions of people, can you imagine taking a penalty in that kind of pressure? Oh, my goodness. So he's going in there and helping them, okay? Now, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but on top of his CV, he has worked with Ronnie O'Sullivan, which is good, because we know about Ronnie's had some difficult things going on, but he's a tremendous champion. And Craig Bellamy of Wales. All right? So those are top of his CV list, so that's good, isn't it? Right? So let's see what happens anyway. So that's the light note of what can go on in someone's mind, you know, when they're in this particular situation. On a heavy note, we might be bombarded with negative thoughts. We may speak ourselves down, which might affect our self-esteem and self-belief. We may get stuck in a cycle of poor attitude towards something or someone, or poor judgment regarding a variety of subjects and issues. Sometimes it's almost as if there's a spiritual fortress made of wrong thoughts built up by the lies of the enemy within our minds. Now, I know I've had a bit of a jokey one, but this is a serious one, because it can put us into a bit of a pit, can't it? When the enemy's had a go, if we've really got to a position where the enemy's been chucking a lot of stuff at us. It's important to know that God can change things in our minds and in our thinking as we stop before him and ask for his help. All right? And let's not forget, there's ways in which we can do this. Of course, we can get help from our spiritual leaders and mentors and friends and stuff. But here's just four very quick points as well, which can also help us. How can we overcome this bombardment? Well, number one, we can remind ourselves that the enemy is a defeated enemy. That's good, isn't it? It's a good start. Number two, we're a new person in Christ. Paul instructs in Colossians 10, he says this, put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of his creator. So we know there's a newness of our minds and of our thinking as we come before God. And we can take hold of that. We can win this. The newness that there is coming from Christ in our minds and in our thinking. Third one, let our minds be transformed. It says this in the scriptures, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The renewing of your mind. And the fourth little bit here, apply the truth of the Bible. It says in Ephesians 6, to take the helmet of salvation. To take the helmet of salvation. When we think of a helmet, we think of head protection, don't we? So for me, it's like, well, yeah, that makes sense. The helmet of salvation. It's like putting on who we are in Jesus. And through faith in him, we have this relationship with God. And it's like a protection upon our lives. It's like a real strength. It's where we can find refuge before God, that these strongholds can be broken and worked upon and beaten. So there's just four little tips there. I can't go into them in detail because I want to move on, but some healthy, helpful mind process that we can consider is just being before Jesus and having our minds renewed, refreshed, and, you know, having our thoughts put on the truth of God rather than the lies of the enemy. Okay, so we're required to look and take hold of these thoughts accordingly to when we've got stuff bombarding our minds, is to take a grip of them, take a grip. I don't know about you, but I don't know if you're a handshaker. Are you a handshaker? Shake the person's hand next to you. Why don't you do that? Shake the hand. See what happens. A little shake. It might be someone you like. It may be someone you don't like. Maybe you've argued with your wife or husband this morning. I know you're shaking hands to make up. All right? Take a grip, okay? Now, I don't know about you, but when I meet someone, I find out, you know, it's either a firm hand grip or half a handshake or a light one if you're shaking a woman's hand, a little bit gentler, just a quick, all right? Because a man, how's it going? Beth's boyfriend, when I first met him, he got in early, almost crushed my hand, he's a rugby player. I was like, ah, stop, calm down. Right, but then, so let's take our thoughts like a handshake, you know, let's get hold of them. Let's not be like a wet lettuce. One of my old managers, he literally had a handshake like a wet lettuce. It was disgusting. It was. Where's your hand gone? But don't allow our thoughts to be like a wet lettuce. You know, let's take a grip of them. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. So next, after taking a grip, we need to file these thought processes. All right. Now here's a snapshot of my inbox. All right. I've gone through all the dodgy emails and got rid of them. Right. This is just a snapshot. Right. Tammy Peston again. And Jez. Look at them. Right. This is what I got there, okay? Now then, for me, this is how my, you know, how my sort of mind works when it comes to emails and work and stuff like that, all right? So the inbox, okay? If it's something you need to do, you know you need to give time to. If you haven't got time at the moment, flag it up. Red flag. Flag him up. We'll come back to him in a bit because something needs to be done about that. Right. If it's something that you've done, you really thought about that, and you've done something about it, and that's job well done, tidy, but I may need to refer to it another time. Folder. This is just some of my folders. Got a lot more folders than this. Charity shop, community groups, doodle invites, okay? And they all go down, initiatives, different initiatives, all right? Willow Creek is down here. Look at this. Down there. Okay, so let's file and put folder of thoughts into relevant folders. The trash bin. Do you get junk mail? I get shedfuls of it. I don't know, before I didn't get any, but now I get loads for some reason. That goes, you highlight it. Can you see the delete button up there? Up at top, straight in. Morgan's and the Cowder Arms there. Right, that could be potentially junk mail, but there's some bargains there sometimes. So that's still, yeah, I'm read that yet to see if it's a good bargain or not. And then there's other things I need to look at, okay? Now then. Now, similarly, I believe that with our minds, if you know, we need to discern what is coming from the enemy, what is coming from God. Is it attention we need to give it to? Is this something we can fold it away? Is this something we should delete and trash? And this kind of thing. Okay? Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Tidy. Right. Okay, moving quickly on then. I'm going to skip the slide 22, Rob, all right? Robbo, tidy. Right, next point. We're going to look at how Jericho was conquered and what we can learn from it. Joshua 6:3-5. Go through this quickly. This is God speaking to Joshua, right? March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have the whole army give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse and the army will go up, everyone straight in. Now, these instructions might seem peculiar to you. Well, in fairness, I think they are a bit. But I'm sure there's a story behind it all. Now then, Matthew, can I check with you very quickly? It's 12:15 now. How many? Are we all right for time? Like, if anyone does need to leave because the chicken's burning, I won't say anything. Sneak out on the side. You're just saying your chicken's more important than the talk. There we go. No, that's just a joke. We do it all the time. No, we don't. Right. There are some suggested reasons for these instructions. One, God was making it undeniably clear that the battle would depend on him and not upon Israel's weapons and expertise. Why priests carrying the ark, not soldiers led? What? Anyway, the priests and the soldiers follow. Right. The second kind of explanation. God's method of taking the city intensified the fear and terror already felt in Jericho. All right. And the third thing, this unusual military maneuver was a test of the Israelites' faith and their willingness to follow God completely. So that's amazing, isn't it? And it was a bit of a carryover with the ram's horn in Numbers. We read about when you go into battle in your own land against an enemy who is oppressing you, sound a blast on the trumpets, then you will be remembered by the Lord your God and rescued from your enemies. Some great stuff there. So the Israelites really, they sense God in all of this, all right? So there's two things of this you know, unusual kind of setup here that I really like about these verses that describe how they were to march around the city and conquer it, all right? Two things that I really like. Thing one, thing two, right. Good Welsh word, thing, right. Number one, structure and order. I like that. God is creative and has made variety more than we can ever imagine. You consider the stars, the animals, the nations, the planet, the variety of God. There's animal species out there which we don't even know about, but God made them and they're around us swimming away nicely. Only God sees the beauty. We haven't seen it yet. All right? But in a very diverse creation, there's still order and structure in place. Joshua was to follow instructions, God's instructions, to get the job done. And on this occasion, specific people were needed to get the job done God's way. So you had the priests and the soldiers to conquer Jericho and pave the way for Israel. And I like this plan of God. So if you think of God and his creativity and, you know, all the stuff that he does, yet I like this little bit of structure. You know, do this my way now. You guys, my people, this is what you should to do. And, you know, follow that. And there's nothing wrong with a bit of structure, is there? A bit of structure and order is necessary to get God's stuff done. It facilitates action. It facilitates creativity. We're all used to it in the world, isn't it? Everything, or any organisation, or any process, or any bus trip we take, or any meal we put on, takes a bit of structure and order. And here, you know, God is at work in Joshua. Like, the second is this, okay? God instructs these things. March around the city for 6 days. Seven priests carry trumpets of ram's horns. Seventh day, march around the city seven times. Then blast the trumpets. Then a long blast on the trumpets. Then give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse. Then Bob's your uncle. All right? They're in. Now, what I like about this, and I'm just going to unpack something very quickly for you, is I'm a bit of a weirdo when it comes to numbers and stuff like this, all right? And I love the number seven. I love the number seven. I don't know why. But I'll explain why I think it is. It's been a big part of my life. Now, it started when I was a kid, and I loved Liverpool Football Club, but my favourite player is Kenny Dalglish. Oh, King Kenny, known to the Liverpool faithful, all right? No, obviously he's not a king. But I love the way he smiled after scoring goals. That's what I liked about him. He's a bit grumpy when he's on the camera, to be honest, but when he scored a goal, he's very happy. He was, to me, the person who was creative, skillful, an entertainer, glided past people, just totally stood out, like the Messi, the Gareth Bale, the Ben Brown of this generation, all right? And sometimes Simon as well, when he pushes up, sometimes he stays back in defence, because he can't be bothered, but he's pretty good going up as well. But what I liked about Kenny is he loved to score goals, he loved to entertain and enjoy what he was doing and all this kind of stuff. And to me, as a kid, it did something internally to me. I don't know what, I can't really describe it. It might have been excitement, I don't know. Okay. But as I went from primary to secondary school in the teenage years, I would insist upon the number seven shirt, like when I played for Troster and all these different teams, all right? Which is why I'm wearing this today, and I'm not wearing a flowery shirt. So I got that, too. Day seven. I like the ring of that, because when I became a Christian then, it's like one of the first things I learned is God made everything in 7 days. And to me, they're like, bosh, yeah, get in there. I like that number. It means a lot. It's creative. It's good. I like it. That's why I like number seven, okay? Now, it may be odd. It may be biblical. You make your own decision up about that. But one of the first experiences of being prophesied over, right? I don't know how familiar we are with prophecy. I know in this church, you know, there's a lot of the prophetic input from God, right? And one of my first experiences was a guy called Gerald Coates, who was leader of Pioneer, who's recently been taken over in the last few years by Billy and Caroline Kennedy. And Gerald prophesied over me. We were having a meeting in Bridgend, and it was all a little bit unusual, a little bit exciting as well. And so he was speaking the prophetic word into my life. And these are a couple of sentences that struck out, right? He spoke two things. First of all, this is what he was saying to me. God has touched your life when you were 7 and 17. I was like, 7 and 17? 7 and 17? Yeah, that's right, that's right. Because when I was 7 and I was in primary school, first of all, I loved the number 7, that's good. The second thing is, there was a primary school teacher who always used to tell Bible stories. And I can remember as a kid sitting on that very uncomfortable floor, believing those Bible stories. All right, and that's what I put it down to. Because later on, I sort of like, wasn't really that interested in God. But something obviously gone in, okay? And at 17 was the age of when I first decided I was going to give my life to Jesus. All right? But for me, you know, that was God like, posh, I am on your case. That was what God was doing. And I liked it, and it opened my eyes. The second thing that Jedler said was this. That God would speak to me, catch my attention, and encourage me through signs and symbols. Signs and symbols. So things like numbers and road signs and goodness knows what. Things going on in my life. I may be asking God questions or may asking God for confirmations of things. And for me, this is how God sort of relates into my thinking. He gives me signs and symbols and words. And you know, I'm driving home and thinking about this. And I pass a road sign which tells me something and gives me a bit of insight. Or I want God to confirm something for me, and he confirms it through a number. You know, now it may sound weird to you, but to me it's like my love language, my communication language in a way, from God. Something as simple as, right, and I go through this now very quickly. This week, okay, Monday, I get an info card. I was wondering, what do I speak on through this chapter? Well, God speaking to me, I had a card in my pigeonhole with someone requesting a prayer request saying for God to speak to me. And I was literally just thinking about, well, what should I put into this talk on Sunday? And this is one of the things. Should I put about how God speaks to us? Well, for me, then I pick his card up. Great, that's tidy. I like that. Then Thursday, I'm going to go through my draft sermon plan, wondering whether it's still appropriate to touch on signs and symbols and how God speaks to us. Because I thought, people are probably going to think I'm nuts, you know. But this is what I did. I was doing the Drisline Castle bit. I'm investigating when it was actually built and all this. Got to the bottom line, 1220. Write that down, 1220. Right, time for a cup of tea. Down here, switch a kettle on, back in the office. Beth was working on the computer. I had to run something by you. I said, oh, Beth, what's the time? 1220. Ooh, great. I like that. Right, yeah, I'm going to do this. 1220 is good. That's good. I like that. So I've got a bit of confidence rolling now because I feel God is on my case, right? So thank you for confirming that, God. That's brilliant. Right, Friday morning, I'm on to the section about talking about the number 7, all right? I thought, oh, they're going to think I'm nuts still, see? Number 7, what's that going to do with life? Okay, so I still get these moments of being unsure, even when God has spoken to me, I'm still like, God, well, give me another sign. So I'm like, oh. Okay, so I'm going down to Tesco's now to do the consumer shop, right? So there's always coffee and sugar and stuff here for us. So sometimes I've got time to do it. Sometimes I have to nip down. I get a bit of lunch as well on Friday. So I'll go down. Go for it. Do my little quick shop, Tesco's. Right, which aisle is the quickest aisle? I always pick the slowest one. Don't mean to, but I do. Go to this aisle. Woman says, sorry, shut in. So I had to go to another island. There's this one island with a woman with a huge pile of shopping. So I'm there waiting. She eventually goes through and it's me next. And the woman still goes, ooh, look at this, all the sevens. The woman's bill comes to £77.77. Now that is a sign. I was God like saying, yes, do you need to know any more? Right, and where's, can you put the picture up of slide 31, please? Oh, I can't see it. That's a shame, it's a bit dark. That says £77.77 there. It's on my phone. Because I was like, oh my gosh, I need a photo, yeah? So I told the woman, can you stop a minute? This might sound a little bit strange. I said, now then, I got a problem. And she's looking at me like, you know, the in-between of getting someone's attention on what you're about to say is like that moment of, you are weird. So she had that fear in her eyes. I said, I know this might sound a bit unusual, but I'm preaching in a church on Sunday, and I've just been doing a little thing about how God speaks to us in today's age. And you know, the thing about seven, and God created the world in seven, and I was wondering whether to do it or not. And when I just saw that on the screen, I thought it would be good to take a photo to show everyone. And she went, it's meant to be. It's meant to be. A woman being served. She was like, yeah, it is. So I take a photo, you believe it, take a photo. Thank you. Oh, got away with that. She presses the button, it takes her voucher number off, and it goes down to 72 or something. Look at my phone. The screen's black, you can't see it. I'm like, oh, you won't believe this, it hasn't come out. Hang on, I'll cancel that now, put it back. Take the vouchers off. She put it back to £77.77. Took it again. Done. I can't believe it. Fair play to her. All right? So it's a way, for me, you know, that's a way how God speaks to us. And even like the time, I'll often look at the time and I remember it'll be like 11 minutes past 11. 1:11. And Randy Cutter always used to do like a training and he mentioned about the double blessing of God. I'll link it through to Isaiah 61:7, where it says about instead of shame, you'll receive a double portion. Instead of disgrace, you'll receive your inheritance. And so you inherit a double portion in your land. And everlasting joy will be yours. And sometimes I just need that reminder from God. What's the time? 11, 11. Oh yeah, God, you know, you're on my case. You love me. Da, 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 da. Okay, so let's learn together. God speaks into our lives. A walk in the woods, along the beach, the night sky. Different way God speaks to us. Through the Bible, a simple passage that speaks to us. A difficult passage we don't get. Study it. And then let God speak to us. And of course, you know, let's look at Jesus, who lets us know who this loving Father is. I did once dream that me and one of my ex-colleagues, Peter, were swimming through a giant strawberry trifle. I still haven't got the interpretation of that one. Because the Bible does say he'll speak to us in our dreams and our visions. And I told Peter that. He just laughed. Anyway, right, I got so much more planned, but I think we better leave it there. Anyway, so now then, so the serious points are, right, at the end of the day, Israel did have to go into that stronghold of evil, all right, and conquer them and kill everything, living thing, which God told them to do, all right? Now, it is hard and harsh, and you do need to study it for yourself because it's important that we understand why God does this. There's this great book called God Behaving Badly, which gives us an understanding, well, a God of love, yet a God of annihilating all these people. As Christians, it's important to understand, we know through the love of Jesus that he loves us, and it's a gospel of grace. So we do need to understand these hard facts. So, Canaan conquered, the promised land, God at work, strongholds of the mind, we can conquer these things. God speaking to us. We all want to hear from God every day, don't we? It can be done easy. Learn our communication methods before God. Reading the Bible, praying, those are the simple ones. But if you're a bit weird like me, and you need a bit more, there's the prophetic, there's discernment, there's words of knowledge, there's all that God has for us, you know, a world, a people group that he made and he wants to communicate to. Okay, that's that. Shall I pray? Yes, Lord, thank you so much that you're at work in our lives and in our hearts, Lord. And, you know, we do want to be open to you, that there's a gospel of grace for the world to hear that you love us, Lord. And even in the mix-up of the difficult things which go on in life, and we see wreck and ruin go on, Lord, and, you know, we know that you're a God of love, and we understand there's an enemy out there, Lord. But the war is won, Lord, and we make it our daily battles personally as individuals where there's battles going on in our minds. We submit those battles to you, Lord, and we ask you, Holy Spirit, right now to reveal truth, to reveal that you love us, to reveal that you have peace for us, to reveal that you have a hope for us, Lord, that there is an eternal destination for us, which is in your presence, where all these bad things will not be anymore. And we will know the complete love and security and blessing and joy of a loving God. In Jesus' name, amen.